Good morning on what's going to be a beautiful sunny morning in Park City. This is Larry Warren, and this is Mountain Money. And Doug Wells, the normal co-host with us this morning, is off on Thanksgiving vacation. So Beth Fratkin is sitting in, and we have an interesting show lined up for this morning. However, we've been promoting the fact that we had John Taffer from the TV show, cable show on Spike, I think, Bar Rescue, talking to us this morning, and lo and behold, a last-minute cancellation. But fortunately, a woman we plan to have on in future weeks was available, so we got a hold of June Lee, who is a Wall Streeter and author of a new book, Tiger Woman on Wall Street, Winning Business Strategies from Shanghai to New York and Back. And we'll be talking about all things China this morning, and welcome Beth to the microphone.
Well, thank you very much, and I'm going away for Thanksgiving too, but I'm not leaving till Wednesday.
Okay, glad you could come in.
Yeah, the second half of our show will be interesting too. We have Gene Hillman from Cafe Zupa, a new restaurant in the Redstone Center, and looks like it's got a great menu, so that'll be nice to hear from him. And then we'll be talking to Patty Connor. She's the director of the Office of Consumer Health Services, which means she's also the director of Avenue H Small Business Health Insurance Program that's run through the state. So,
and we're talking to her today because in 1 week from today now, KPCW presents its annual forum this year, partnering with Intermountain Healthcare and the Park City Medical Center to tell you all about the Affordable Care Act and answer your questions. That's a discussion that we will have at the Jim Santee Auditorium next Monday night, beginning at 6, and we have a social beginning at 5. So if you want to come over after work, socialize with us, and then at 6 we will have the healthcare forum. So that will be next week, and that's why we'll have Patty Connor on as well this morning, and we will be back in just a minute to talk to June Lee, the Tiger Woman on Wall Street.
Juniper Landing is proud to support our local radio station, KPCW. Juniper Landing is a new, whole ownership townhome community located at the base of Canyons Resort, adjacent to the Waldorf Astoria Park City, with a model open daily. Our website is juniperlandingparkcity.com.
Tune in to KPCW every Tuesday morning at 9 to hear This Green Earth.
We'll cover environmental issues from local to global, from snowpack to giant squid,
geothermal energy to gray wolves,
and honeybees to sustainable chocolate. Brought to you by Jones Waldo Holbrook and McDonough,
Republic Services,
Habitat for Humanities Restore,
and Rocky Mountain Power.
And welcome back to Mountain Money, and welcome to June Lee. Thanks for joining us on short notice this morning, June.
Thank you for having me, Larry.
Well, it's our pleasure to have you on Mountain Money here in Park City, Utah, a place where a lot of Wall Streeters come with their money and build McMansions. Not even McMansions. They just build mansions on the ski slopes here. We wanted to talk to you because your book intrigued us, Tiger Woman on Wall Street. Your background is growing up in Shanghai, and I don't know what other kids, your contemporaries in school dreamed about, but you dreamed about coming to America and working on Wall Street, which you have successfully done with your own investment company. And tell us about that journey. How do you aspire to Wall Street when you're Chinese?
Yeah, I mean, it's the book is a business memoir, so there really a memoir component to it, which is about my journey from the streets in Shanghai to coming to the U.S., the rural campus of Middlebury in Vermont, with literally nothing but a suitcase, and how I sort of thrived in my academic career on campus for 4 years, and then moved to New York to pursue a job on Wall Street.
And you didn't even arrive with much English, did you?
No, I thought I did speak English because I passed the TOEFL test with really high scores, but only after I arrived on campus and started to mingle and make friends with college students, I realized that, oops, I did not really speak, you know, the college English, which is very colloquial and lots of slangs. So it was a pretty tough transition from a city, the biggest city in China, to a rural sort of campus. But it also forced me to integrate effectively with fellow students, and it's a beautiful campus and with great academic sort of programs. So I learned economics, fell in love with sort of the learning of market-oriented economics. And much more important, I discussed this in length. I also learned a universal code of ethics, which is, you know, which is very lacking in China, because, you know, cheating is so much, you know, a regular part of life. And as I discussed in the book, you know, cheating is not really about getting ahead, but really a way to prevent one from falling behind. So, you know, recent media has been very focused on J.P. Morgan's practice in China, hiring, you know, princelings to get deals, investment banking deals. I mean, you know, it is just such a regular, you know, thing, you know, part of the activity you have to engage in to, you know, to not to lose to the competition. So, so from Middlebury, I then, you know, got a job first as an investment banking analyst at Credit Suisse on Wall Street. And okay. I realized quickly that, you know, stocks are really my passion. So I transitioned to be a stock analyst at Franklin Templeton.
Okay. And then, you know, well, let's step back a step as well and go back to China. You describe yourself as a tiger woman, and you had tiger parents. It sounds like your dad was pretty ruthless with his multiplication tables, etc.
Yeah. So Amy Choi wrote a book on tiger parenting. So my dad is a tiger parent on steroid. So what that means is that, you know, I mean, I had a somewhat unusual childhood, even by Chinese standards. So, you know, academic success is such a focus in life at expense of many other aspects of human growth. So, I mean, in my book, I kind of discuss the dark side of this singular focus on professional and the career success at expense of the balance, the sort of the human aspect of, you know, life. So,
Okay, well, let's switch the topic to China now, because that's your specialty, right? On Wall Street, you analyze Chinese companies and so on. And China is where everybody has wanted to be for the last decade or two. Including a lot of Park City businesses that have some manufacturing in China. But China's kind of falling off the wagon right now of economic boom, isn't it?
Well, there are two sides of the story to the China growth. One is, you know, everyone knows over the past 34 years, China has achieved tremendous success in lifting hundreds of millions of people out of poverty. And it's unprecedented by global standards. It did it faster than the, you know, Western industrial civilization. However, that economic growth model is based on the singular mode of economic sort of method, which is low-end manufacturing-driven, high-volume, low-margin, endless of economic of scale industrial model. And that has come to the end of its life. And the reason is that the cost structure has shifted up permanently, not cyclically, but rather secularly. So the wage inflated, the operating cost increased, rental cost increased. So to keep, you know, to sustain the growth, we need to transition as quickly as we can from this old mode of growth to the new mode, which has to be innovation driven, which has to be which has to encourage entrepreneurship. And that's actually what China can learn the most from America. You know, America is still the strongest country in the world in the sense that It's rich in entrepreneurship. And that's not going to be easy for China because, in essence, it's still a planned economy. Entrepreneurship and innovation involves risk-taking, and risk-taking involves failure. Well, unlike in the U.S., failures are socially acceptable. In China, you know, failure is not a part of planning. So, you know, that if we don't take risks, if we don't allow ourselves to fail, then, you know, it's very hard for us to innovate and to invent and to grow into a high-value-oriented, you know, service-oriented, high-level, you know, manufacturing mode. So that's why I think the current model is stalled. And we need the institutions and the software in the economy, such as the human capital, accountability, corporate governance, innovation.
Well, does an individual businessman or woman have access to capital like they do here?
They're not at an equal footing with, you know, state-owned enterprises. And that's why we see, you know, a lot of inefficient large state-owned, state-affiliated enterprises. Even though they're operating at a same model, they're still able to keep afloat because they have an advantage to get bank loans from, you know, state-owned banks.
So you're talking about not only economic changes but cultural changes in order to encourage entrepreneurship in China to get away from the industrial mode. Correct.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think, you know, when Westerners and a lot of Americans and people from the Western economy goes to China, they're duly impressed by the booming, you know, infrastructure, the modern, you know, high-speed rails and the subways and the airports. I mean, what they don't see is the underlying software, which is largely defined by human capital and integrity and the ability to innovate and invent. So, I mean, I think that really comes back to how we are going to adapt our political and social structure to support the next leg of economic growth.
You know, you touched on it earlier, but let's go back to it. The subject of business ethics. In America, lately we've certainly lacked it, as you can tell by the settlements with the federal government of major investment banks. So there's been some major transgressions here in the U.S. But in China, it is, as you said, part of the culture to get ahead almost at any cost. Is that mentality breaking down now, or what's it going to take to play on a level playing field with Chinese businessmen?
Yeah. I mean, you raised a really interesting observation. I mean, I think you know, the opacity, lack of transparency is not just a China specific unique thing. I mean, it's very prevalent, you know, beyond China, especially in emerging markets, but to a degree in the U.S. as well. I mean, you could argue, you know, Gaynor now goes to Warburg Pincus, right? Chelsea Clinton used to work KKR. So, I mean, what's the big deal of, you know, J.P. Morgan China hires princelings to get deals? So, I mean, I agree there's a sort of a universal element to it, but China is especially opaque and the lack of checks and the balances. And the one question that I got asked millions of times is why, you know, when economy that grew quadrupled actually since 2000 and doubled since 2010, you know, the stock market is still lagging. I mean, one obvious reason is the corporate governance, right? People don't believe the reported numbers. And the other reason is that, you know, when economy, GDP is just a measure of economic size, the size of the economy. It's not a measure of profits. It's certainly not a measure of profits distributable to shareholders, to minority shareholders. So when U.S. investors invest in China, they are effectively all minority shareholders. So even the size of the economy grew, and the profits don't grow as much. The profits left over distributable to American investors certainly don't correspond to the growth of GDP growth. So that's why you see we have, you know, 400% growth in GDP since 2000, and stock market tanked.
Well, recently the Chinese government has changed some pretty basic policies, the policies on how many kids parents are allowed to have, because I assume that they think that the population growth is slowing so much that it'll be a hamper on the economy. Can you talk about things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a one-child policy. The change abolishment of one-child policy is a big deal because we are in such a demographic change, and then, you know, we are running into this labor participation problem. But, you know, the fact that you allow that you have more children does not mean people are willing to have more children, does not mean people can afford more children. So, I mean, that's something to consider. I mean, apparently the market endorsed and welcomed and gets encouraged by the details coming out of the third plenum, which just got closed last week. But my view is so much is about execution and implementation. The high-level abstract with details is certainly welcome, and it's encouraging, especially the focus on, you know, market force continues to be the driving force of the growth, and the focus on reforming SOEs and encouraging the all very good, but I'm much more interested in seeing the detailed measures coming out of this. So in December, I believe they're going to have a follow-through meeting where, you know, leaders discuss exactly how we are going to reform the land policy, how we are going to, you know, encourage in the continued urbanization, the detailed execution plan. So I think it's easy to, you know, talk the talk. It's much harder to walk the talk. So I'd like to see more execution follows through before I become more positive and bullish on the economy.
Yeah, I recently read an article in the New York Times, and it was talking about how a lot of young tiger women type people like yourself from Shanghai are getting so sick of the pollution and the high costs in the big city that they're moving to small towns and resorts and starting little places like Park City with art galleries and cafes and that kind of thing. Do you think that's
Dunkin' Donuts franchises maybe?
Oh, I mean, Park City, I mean, it's obviously it's a heavenly. I mean, I used to go there three times a year to ski. I mean, I have such a fond memory of Park City and this community. You know, the environmental pollution is a major issue, and it's becoming more and more pronounced. And we do see, you know, more and more Chinese people come to the U.S. to purchase real estate, to get a green card, to live here. So, yeah, it's definitely something we needed to put in control. Chinese women, I think they're very strong, and we are seeing a, you know, good, you know, the Chinese woman on Wall Street. I'm seeing more and more Chinese women, you know, achieving high level of success on Wall Street. So, I mean, I think the strength, the skill set, and the resilience, you know, they possess is such a unique, you know, character that they bring to the workforce in the United States.
You know, you say there are more of your contemporaries from China working on Wall Street. You seem to think Wall Street is a pretty level playing field for women, and the impression is that it's a bunch of alpha males who pump their fists and drive hard bargains and are just very aggressive on Wall Street. But you say that's not really the culture you came into.
Yeah, I think Wall Street is hugely misunderstood. It's a big industry. It's a big, you know, sort of a catch-all, you know, name. I mean, within Wall Street, there are brokerage business, there are sales and trading, there's investment management, there's, you know, investment banking. And I came from the investment banking background, and, you know, to be honest, I'm not a big fan of investment banking business because I think that's the ultimate profession of sales. But, you know, I fell in love with research. I love to, you know, research how business makes money, how they manage to grow, and why they succeed and why they fail. And I think it's very much sort of analytical, sort of driven business, where one's performance is really marked by the market, not so much by human subjectivity. So I think if someone wanted to, you know, circumvent the glass ceiling they face in the corporate world, Wall Street is a very compelling alternative. Or they can just strike out and take ownership of their work and become an entrepreneur, business owner. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I heard a lot about Sheryl Sandberg's LinkedIn, and I think, you know, some propositions are interesting, but I don't totally agree. Some of them I don't agree at all. I don't think women are stalled. I think women around the world are soaring. You know, women's role in the corporate, in workplace, in the corporate world is not just measured by sort of the number of seats they take in the boardroom in the corporate world, but also by a lot of other areas, by, you know, their contribution in the family, by their contribution in small micro businesses, and by their contribution in, you know, performance-driven, results-driven roles, such as, you know, Wall Street, some parts of some subgroups, subsector within Wall Street.
So you don't think that the fact that we have very few CEOs on Wall Street or elsewhere is a big concern, because you think that women are playing important roles anyway?
I think women have more choices in life than men, because they can choose to lean in the corporate world. They can also choose to check out so that they can, you know, play a big role.
Whoops.
Hello.
Raise the children. I don't consider that as checkout. I mean, I consider that as a very important, if not more important, job than the corporate world. So I think it is the woman's choice. And, you know, ultimately, a person's personal success is defined by balance and happiness, not exactly by, you know, the career title they achieved. Now, some women, and me included, focus very much on career. But again, that's a personal choice. So I don't think it's a black and a white definition of what women should do. It's rather, you know, it's case by case. Women should have the rights and the freedom to decide what and how they want to get to the happiness.
Well, that's a good place to leave this interview. That's a pretty positive way to end up. Thank you so much for calling in this morning. That was really interesting.
Yeah, June, thanks for leaping into this interview in place of John Taffer. Again, if you are tuning in to hear John Taffer, we'll try to reschedule him at a later date.
Thank you for having me, guys.
And your book is called Tiger Woman on Wall Street, Winning Business Strategies from Shanghai to New York and Back. Thanks for joining us. And coming
Thank
up,
you for having me. Have a great day.
Okay, you too. And interesting that June was a three-time a winter skier here in Park City, knows the town well. Came a long way from China to here. So let's switch gears here and talk a little bit about the weather. It's going to be sunny through Tuesday, and mostly sunny on Wednesday, Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, and Friday. So not much a chance of snow at all, but the lows will be below freezing. So we'll be making snow at all three resorts all week long, at least in the evenings, because the high today is supposed to get up to 41. Okay, coming up next, we have Gene Hillman from Cafe Zupa, new restaurant opening in Redstone, and we'll be back with that after this.
Hi, this is Steve Roney with Prudential Utah Real Estate, a proud supporter of KPCW. With more than 100 sales associates and 14 gallery or ski-in offices in Park City, Prudential Utah can help you with your residential or commercial real estate needs. More information at pru-utah.com or with the Prudential Utah mobile search app.
Park City Realty Group is proud to support KPCW. Park City Realty Group has provided real estate services to buyers and sellers since 2005. Our team shares local knowledge and insight with clients who value the Park City lifestyle. Knowledge plus hard work equals success. 649-1991 or parkcityrealtygroup.com.
Underwriting on KPCW is supported by Mountain West Bank in Park City, a community bank offering home financing service and guidance. Mountain West Bank is located near Kearns Boulevard next to the movie theater. More information at mountainwestbank.com. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Good morning. Welcome back to Mountain Money. You're listening to KPCW 91.9 FM. We have another interesting guest for you coming up, Gene Hillman from Cafe Zupa, a new restaurant that opened out by the Junction just about a couple weeks ago, and it looks like it's going to be a good one. The menu looks delicious, and we're looking forward to talking to him.
Good morning,
Gene.
Welcome to Mountain Money, and let's talk a little bit about Cafe Zupa. How long have you been open, and where can we find you?
All right. Well, in Park City, we've been open just a few weeks there, and it's Cafe Zupa's with an S, just to get the record straight.
Okay.
But, yeah, we've been open a few weeks there, and things are going fantastic, and in general, we've been in the Wasatch Front. We started with our first restaurant in Provo about 9 years ago. So.
And that's what we want to talk about is because an awful lot of people start up restaurants in Park City, and you started, and it's a tough environment, and you've survived and thrived through a pretty nasty recession, and now have opened how many stores?
So in Utah, we have 17, and we've recently expanded into additional states. So we've got four locations in Phoenix and two in Las Vegas, and in the coming year, we'll be opening in additional states.
Okay, so. What was that your vision when you opened the first one, that you would grow it from more than one cafe?
Well, I've been with Cafe for about 3 years now. Rob and Dustin, they like to keep it under the radar, the two owners. They started, I don't think they really did have that vision to begin with. They actually both come from the tech industry. So they were in marketing and sales in the tech industry, did a lot of travel and loved food, and decided to get out of the tech industry and dive into the restaurant industry, and they'll admit that they were fairly ignorant to how most restaurants run, and it actually plays to their benefit because they started doing things kind of the hard way and the good way, in that they make their own soups in-house, and they realized, oh, everyone else is getting their soups, you know, out of a commissary. That's the easy way to do it, but they stuck to their values on that, and applied what they know about, you know, just business in general, and have been able to make a great model that was duplicatable. So
do they still own all the stores, or is this franchised?
So they're all corporate owned. Yeah. So they opened their second store in Draper, maybe a couple years after the Provo location, and then got the vision to expand more aggressively. And so they've been doing that since. And the vision definitely now is to go nationwide.
Well, that's impressive from one location. And as you say, that these are software guys, so what they knew about soup was pretty minimal, maybe how to open a Campbell's can, but
well, they did love food a lot. They just didn't necessarily know how other restaurants operate, which there's a lot of kind of the, I wouldn't say underbelly, but there's some hidden secrets that most restaurants employ to make themselves profitable. So it took them a while to get the process down so that they could be profitable and make their own soups in-house and do things by hand and still be profitable. But they've been able to figure that out, so we're excited to grow from here.
So tell us about your menu. What's so great about Zupa's?
Well, we primarily are soup, salads, and sandwiches. So, I think our main signature would be our amazing soups. They're all created, like I said, in-house, from scratch. And they have an amazing assortment of salads that are unique. So those are made for you. It's called a fast casual. I mean, most people know kind of the Cafe Rio model of going through the line. You get the food and then sit down. So it's not really fast food. It's not really full service. It's kind of some hybrid. But we make all our salad dressings in-house. So our salads are really fantastic, and same with our sandwich spreads and everything. So we also do an assortment of panini-style sandwiches that go great with the soups. They're basically grilled cheese-style sandwiches with other things in there, and then a line of fresh sandwiches that are cold.
Okay, now this is a business show, so let's talk about the business of restaurants. How did Cafe Zupas come to decide Park City was where they wanted to be next, and where all did you look for locations? Is there a lot of research into siting a restaurant?
Absolutely, yeah. Probably one of the hardest things we do. Location is everything. We really believe in our model, and so we know that we can open a restaurant and people will come. But having the right location is key. Park City was a hard one actually for us because just with the way we source our food and everything, it's nice to have several in a geographic location. So where we have quite a few down in the Wasatch Front, down in Salt Lake and south of Salt Lake area, it makes it nice for our suppliers to get to us. Park City, even though it's very close, it almost operates almost like an out-of-state location. So it was a hard decision to go up there, but we decided we could make it work. And I can't tell you all the different places we looked to open, in terms of the location, but we figured Kimball Junction was a nice fit with everything going on right there. So
okay, what did you need in terms of size, and did you have to build your own kitchen, and what kind of investment is involved in opening a Cafe Zupas?
Well, I don't know that I get too far into the details and in the actual numbers, but we definitely, when we find a location, we gut it and start from scratch and do a full build out. And our kitchen is definitely one of the most expensive parts of our build out. We have very expensive soup kettles that go in, and other technologies that go in there to help us be profitable and efficient in making our soups and everything. So, it's quite the deal. We definitely have a number of those underway at any given moment. We've got a great building team who handle all the build outs. The owners, for the moment anyway, are handling a lot of the research on new developments. So they're traveling a lot to find new locations all the time.
So do you look for, I presume about the first thing you'd look for is traffic counts, number of people going by a location. But are you also picking locations based on demographics? Do you want a certain demographic?
Absolutely. We do like there to be kind of a certain number of bedrooms within the area. And then we also like to have, obviously, but traffic is nice and important. A big part of our business is catering as well. So we do look for locations that have within, a short 3 or 5 mile radius, a lot of office space and that kind of thing where we can do catering for lunches and that kind of thing.
Are you open for dinner?
We are open for dinner. Yeah, we open at 11 o'clock for lunch, and we close at 9 o'clock on the weekdays and 10 o'clock on the weekends.
So does the menu change as the day wears on, or it's the same menu all the time?
The same menu. Definitely people tend to choose more of the hearty soups and that kind of thing for dinner, and they'll lean on the the salad side and for lunch, but the menu's the same all the way through. Now, we do a lot more desserts at dinner time as well. We have a nice assortment of desserts.
Also, it looks like one of your signatures is a soft drink bar, fountain drinks, and you have, I see, 16 different fountain drinks with free Italian soda flavorings to go with them. So I presume in the world of restaurants, and I think I've read the research that backs it up, that fountain drinks are about the most high-profit item there is in a restaurant. So anything you can do to enhance the experience of buying a fountain drink is going to go to the bottom line.
Right, yeah. And it's definitely something very unique to Cafe Zuppa's in that you can get your fountain drink, and they've got the nice, they're actually imported Italian syrups, Italian flavoring soda syrups that you can add to your drink. And it's been a big hit, and people love to do it, and it works, so...
How has your response been since you've opened?
It's been fantastic. Typically, what we'll do is we'll start with some pre-opening parties, basically invite some people to come and eat for free and make that an opportunity for our staff to get trained up and kind of get them in used to serving people. And then we'll open the doors quietly as a soft opening without a whole lot of advertising. And I'll let people just kind of trickle in, and that, again, that helps our staff kind of get up to speed before we hit the, you know, a huge grand opening event. But what happened to Park City is after our pre-opening parties, we quietly opened the doors for business, and people came flooding over. So it's nice when that happens, when you don't have to do a lot of promoting and advertising, and people just get the word basically by word of mouth.
Well, so, that's you know. Exactly, I guess, your strategy is working. Excuse me. But I haven't heard much about it except word of mouth. Do you do much advertising? And in a little micro market like Park City, will you just mostly stick with word of mouth?
Typically what we do is, and I'm the marketing manager, so people ask me about advertising all the time. I get people soliciting, you know, advertising to me, and I tell them that our most powerful marketing tool is excellent execution in the kitchen and in the restaurant. If you have a great experience, provide a great experience for your customers, they tend to get on social media, they tend to tell people about their experience. And that's the single best thing we can do to get people in our door. But in addition to that, typically what we will do, like I said, we'll have a grand opening, and we haven't scheduled that one for Park City, being the holidays and everything. We haven't, and I'll be frank, partly is because we're still trying to staff the place. We have a lot of staff coming up from Salt Lake to help out there. We've had a heck of a time trying to find employees to work up there. It's been a tough market. But once we get that straight, we'll typically do a direct mail piece, something you'll get in your mailbox, to everybody up in the Park City area, probably over to Heber and everything. We'll get a postcard announcing our arrival and inviting them to come in for a special deal. But once that's over, then, yeah, we pretty much just rely on good old word of mouth.
Okay, well, thanks very much for joining us, Gene Hillman of Cafe Zuppa's. And where exactly are you? You're in the Redstone section of Kimball Junction?
Exactly, yeah, not far from the theater over there, just east of the mall outlet there.
Okay, very fine. Thanks for joining us, and we will be back to talk about health insurance and Utah's small business Health Exchange, Avenue H, after this.
This is Christian Bohr with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Did you know that by shopping locally, you're supporting trail maintenance, our free bus system, and the many wonderful cultural and recreational opportunities in our community? When you shop or dine in Summit County, those dollars stay right here in Summit County. The Park City Chamber Bureau is pleased to support KPCW's locally grown radio show, Mountain Money. Remember, keep it local, keep it PC. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. You're listening to KPCW 91.9 FM in Park City. We have Patty Connor on the phone. She's the Director of Consumer Health Services and the Director of Avenue H, the small business health insurance program that the state of Utah runs. And we're sure she'll be having some interesting information about health insurance to relay to us. Good morning, Patty. How are you?
Good morning, Beth. I'm doing good. Thank you.
Although interesting is it causes one's eyes to glaze at times with so much news and so much just basic change in the way we shop for health insurance. So let's make it clear how Avenue H fits into the process of buying health insurance under the Affordable Care Act.
Sure. Well, Larry, as you know, Avenue H has been Utah's state-based exchange since 2010. Our focus is on small business between 150 employees that are eligible for insurance coverage. So it's those employees who are working 30 hours or more that would be eligible. And Avenue H provides a unique opportunity for small employers that they wouldn't find in the commercial marketplace because they get to set a defined contribution amount. So it's a flat dollar amount of employer contribution that meets their budget, and it allows them to pick something that'll work for each of their employees. And then once they do the defined contribution, the employees get the opportunity to shop for their own health care plan across three different medical insurers, and there's 70 different health care plans. And then we also have seven dental carriers with 48 plans and HSA accounts as well.
Why would an individual employee want to go with Avenue H instead of going with the healthcare.gov?
That's a great question, Beth. The reason why is because you get pre-tax benefits under the group insurance. And if you do the comparison between doing a tax subsidy versus a pre-tax benefits, a lot of the times the pre-tax benefit ends up still being a great value for them than to go through the individual market and purchase a plan that way.
Okay, let's back up and talk about that pre-tax benefit. What do you mean by that? What's in it for the employee and the employer?
So all group insurance is pre-tax, so the employer and the employee both get to take a tax deduction before taxes are taken out of their pay. So it helps with them to reduce that actual taxable amount that comes out of their paychecks. If you were to do it on the other side, all of the benefits that you pay for outside of group insurance are taxable. So if an employer said, I just want to give my employees some extra money, let them go to the individual marketplace and shop for coverage, they're paying with post-tax dollars, so they didn't get the advantage that they would have had in pre-tax.
Well, that could add up, because even the employee contribution is still going to be significant under new group plans, right?
That's true.
Okay, so how does one sign up and know if they qualify?
Okay. They can go to avenueh.com, and on our website, they can find information about participating as a small group, what qualifies them. We have an anonymous quote tool, so you can go through and see what the rates and the plans look like without providing any registration information. So that's right there on avenueh.com. And then when the group is ready to enroll, they'll just go through and do registration, set up the group, and then the employer will inform their employees when it's time for them to go in and enroll and pick their health care plan.
What's a typical contribution of the employers?
Our contribution in the past 3 years has been around $435 per employee per month. But again, the employer has total flexibility on what meets their budget. And if they can't afford anything, Avenue H allows them not to contribute anything at all. There's no minimum. And it does give the employer total flexibility on how they manage their budget.
What do you anticipate? Is there any way yet crunching numbers to know, are under Affordable Care Act, are small businesses going to be paying more in general or less in general for their health insurance?
Yeah, I think that's the million-dollar question everybody wants to know, right? Probably not the $1 million, the right way to say that, but everyone is going to be in a different situation. Because the individual advanced premium tax subsidy is based off of annual household income, as an employer, you don't know that. You don't know what your employee's annual household income is. And I think everyone's financial as well as their tax-dependent situation is going to vary so much that I would just recommend that everybody do their research and figure out what is the right option. Because in some cases, they're going to find that the individual marketplace may be beneficial. And a lot of times they may find staying with group insurance would be a better financial situation for them.
So next year, when all businesses with 50 or more employees are required to offer insurance, will they be going through you in Utah?
For those that have under 50 eligible, would be going through us. They have the option to go through us or still purchase in the commercial market. But if they're over 50 full-time employees, then they would still need to purchase in the commercial market. The Affordable Care Act says that we need to go to 100 employees by 2016. And unless we do something from a legislative session this next year, we won't do that until 2016.
So Avenue H has been around even prior to Affordable Care Act. So with Affordable Care Act in place and confusion rampant and websites not doing what they can do, is the process a lot simpler purchasing through Avenue H?
And I think that's a very fair statement to make. We have been around and we do have tested technology and have been doing this for a few years. It's not like we're just starting up and saying, here, come check us out. We've actually been operating for the last 3 years, going on our fourth year. There are some changes for 2014 that we do have in place on the way rates are done, what plans are available so they can pick qualified health care plans. And then we simplified the process for enrolling for small groups. In the past, it had been a 60 to 90-day period to go through health underwriting for the group and get an individual rate for the group. In 2014, that changes. So now a group can just register online in a matter of 15 to 30 minutes, do the registration. The rates are all right there that you can get from the quote tool, and then they can have the groups enroll. And groups can actually enroll for January 1st through December 10th of this year. And employees have until December 15th to enroll for January 1st. And we're open every single month, so if they miss the January window, they can certainly come in February, March, April, anytime throughout the year. There's no limitation on when small groups can join.
Are there deadlines you need to meet to avoid a rate bump for 2014?
The ones for 2014 are already in place. Anybody's applying for right now is for January 1st. We did do early renewals for existing groups for December, and that window has already passed.
Okay, so the bottom line is this plan will offer tax advantages, one-stop shopping. What are the other selling points for Avenue H for small business?
Certainly employee choice and employer flexibility on that defined contribution. And then the other thing we didn't talk about is the small employer premium tax credit, that small employers with less than 25 employees with annual salaries under $50,000 could get up to a 50% tax credit from the IRS. And that's only available on Avenue H in 2014. So we encourage small employers that fit into that criteria to take a look at it, because it's also a way to help their cost savings when they're contributing towards the employees' health care plans.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good deal.
And it's been around since 2011, but now it's only available on Avenue H with some new parameters that make it even more flexible.
Well, you know, here in Park City, where, well, we have the big resorts and big hotels, but an awful lot of small businesses. This sounds like a terrific option for simplifying what's a very confusing and complicated landscape right now, and one that offers tax advantages both for the employees and the employers.
And you get the same advantage of being able to pick that individual policy that meets your needs instead of having to go out into the individual marketplace.
So can people call and ask questions, or is it all web-based?
No, you can also call. So, again, our web address is avenueh.com. So you can get a lot of information from there and get the right quote. Our number is 1-855-850-2834. And again, that's 1-855-850-2834.
Okay, very fine. And, of course, one can Google Avenue H and they'll get right to you.
That's correct.
Now, does every state have an exchange like this for small business?
Every state under the Affordable Care Act has to operate one, but there are only 14 states operating them. The rest of them are using the federal marketplace, so they'll be the same as the individual marketplace.
Okay, very fine. Well, thanks a lot for joining us, Patty. I want to mention to the audience again that KPCW, in partnership with Intermountain Healthcare, is presenting a community forum on the subject of the Affordable Care Act. We're there with experts to answer all your questions, explain things. There will be Q&A time, and that is at the Jim Santee Auditorium next Monday evening. We're going to have a social at 5. Come by after work and break bread with us. And then at 6 o'clock, we will do a live broadcast from the Santee. We encourage you to either listen on the radio, but if you want your questions answered, come in person to the Santee next Monday evening. And Patty, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Okay, and we will be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longreimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery. For 30 years, we know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com. VaultHomeLoans.com. Purchase and refinance mortgages. Conventional FHA and VA. 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. And again, apologies, John Taffer, the Raise the Bar guy, the guy from Bar, what's that show called now?
Bar Rescue.
Bar Rescue. And here I went and watched two of them back to back last night, and it was full of questions about, did Dimples ever make it?
Who's Dimples?
Dimples was some down and out bar past its prime in L.A. somewhere, and the other one I watched was some lady in Long Beach, and all her employees were stealing her blind, and she still wanted to keep them because she loved them, even after John Taffer explained that they're robbing from you. So interesting, and we'll try to reschedule him at a later date. Interesting to hear June Lee's take on. As a little girl in China, she didn't aspire to be, I don't know, a Chinese ruler. She aspired to be a Wall Streeter,
yeah.
And made it. So.
And coming from Shanghai to Middlebury, Vermont, I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's a very small, quaint New England town. That must have been quite the culture shock.
Especially not having a command of English and starting college-level courses. So,
yeah.
Indeed, she is the Tiger Woman on Wall Street, which is the name of her book. Well, I want to thank our great sponsors, Park City Realty Group, been with us a long time, along with Mountain West Bank, the Iron Mountain Group, the Park City Chamber, San Francisco Design, and Prudential Real Estate. And a reminder that next day on Tuesday, This Green Earth takes this place on the radio with Chris Cherniak and Nell Larson. And our guests next week are going to be Bryn Carey from Ski Butlers. They've got a gonzo new website we want to talk about. And Kate Bjordahl, who is a veterinarian at Powder Paws. So with that, we'll say thank you for joining us. The forecast is for sunny skies and 41 degrees today with a low of 19. We also want to thank Beth Fratkin for joining the program this morning in place of Doug Wells. And this is KPCW Park City, also found at kpcw.org.